Okay, now I think we can start the Dhamma sermon. Actually, these days we are Uruka Sutta. Actually, Uruka Sutta is the very first sermon available in the Sutta Nipata. That is one of the ancient books which is accepted as belonging to the early Buddhist teachings, and very interesting suttas are included in this sutta. And we are one by one discussing the verses. Actually, altogether there are 17 verses in this sutta, and now we have come to the end of the sutta. So the repeated verse or repeated term phrase available in this sutta is related to the one of the interesting activity each and every serpent is conducting. So time to time they are shedding off their worn out skin. So when they are doing it, they want to do it. Actually, they are not having any sort of attachment to that, because it is worn out. Now they want to leave it aside. They want to let it go. They want to abandon that. So Buddha used this as a simile to give a various kind of perspectives about the spiritual life, spiritual practice. Because we as human beings, we as different beings, we actually hold things. We actually grasp things. So grasping, holding, clinging, claiming, possessing, acquiring. And these are very natural things that we are quite used to, even addicted to. And we don't know sometimes how to let go things, how to abandon things, how to renunciate things. Now, time to time when we see a serpent has let go of its worn out skin, probably we can recognize, okay, there is something we also might have to abandon. So sometimes our character traits are there, wrong habits are there. Probably I might have wrong habit, maybe wrong addictions, maybe wrong perceptions. Sometimes different kinds of moods. So different such things are available, and time to time we get on to those. But rather than holding them, rather than grasping them, rather than taking them seriously, how about letting them go, abandoning them? So therefore Buddha specially mentioned that an arahant is someone who has completely kept aside the burden. Actually, we, on the other hand, we are always keeping some burden. Our minds are fairly crowded. Minds are somewhat heavy, because we are, wherever we go, we are holding whatever we want, whatever we like. Our belongings, our possessions, our designations, various our conventions. So many things actually we are holding, we are possessing, and we are making a person or self out of that. Wherever we go, we are carrying this luggage. But an arahant, on the other hand, Buddha mentioned, is someone who has completely kept aside the luggage, completely abandoned the luggage. So he is someone who is completely lighter, freed. Now, in this 16th sutta, if we come to the verse, yassa vanataja na santi kechi vinibandhaya bhavaya hetu kappa sobhikku jahati oraparang urago jinnamiva tacham purana yassa vanataja na santi kechi. One who has no states born from desire. Now this vana is a, on the other hand, kind of a jungle. It's a synonym for craving, tanha, desire. And what is born out of that tanha, various other defilements, are the vanataja. So on the other hand, one can say kind sort of other defilements. And fairly the craving appear like the one of the roots. as a dukkha samudaya, Buddha mentioned as the tanha, craving, appear like the root, source, reason. But associating that, born out of that, there are many other defilements. But for this particular person, for this arahant, so there is no such kind of defilements. So his mind is completely pure. Vinibandhaya bhavaya hetu kappa. Now those defilements are the ones binding us to this ongoing sansara. Again and again becoming. Maybe a human, maybe an animal, maybe a celestial being, maybe a Brahma, again an animal, again a human being. So again and again we are changing our shapes, changing our positions, changing our life. So different forms. And we are bound to that process. We are bound to the sansara, five aggregates. But for this arahant, there is no such kind of a bondage. And there are no causes because he has completely abandoned those defilements, those roots. And on the other hand, we can consider, according to the commentary, this vanatha, the term vanatha is a synonym for anusaya. You might have heard that there are seven latent tendencies, and we discussed about them last few weeks ago. And so vanatha is another synonym for anusaya. Different anusaya or latent tendencies are operating within ourselves, so they are not visible, by the way. So at the moment, probably my mind, your mind may be free from lust, free from anger, free from jealousy, free from any kind of a doubt. But unfortunately, it doesn't guarantee that in the next moment, in the next hour, in the next day, after 1 week, I might not get angry, not get lustful, not get jealous. Because still that potential is available, latent tendency is available. So that is where we need to be a little careful. Without immediately certifying ourselves, without immediately guaranteeing about the state of the mind, so we have to give a little error or kind of space for us to get wrong, or for us to again become defiled, the mind again to get defiled, because such potential is still within us. So if one is completely rid of this anusaya, who is went through anusaya pahana, abandoning of all these latent tendencies, then there is no such kind of a problem. He can live freely. There is no fear because all the roots are cut off. And now he can freely move. And now he doesn't need to even worry about the next show or the other show, because the task is done, completed. No need to have a kind of another aim. Now we, on the other hand, we have kind of an aim. So I need to cross. I need to purify. I need to abandon. I need to let go. So likewise, we are always still having some sort of an urge. So that is necessary actually. But when one becomes an arahant, so it is mentioned, now he has completed the task. Kata karaniyo. He has completed the task. Whatever the spiritual achievement he has to do, whatever the practice he has to conduct, he has completed. Kata karaniyo. Ohita bharo. So he has completely kept aside the heaviness, the weight. Now he is feeling lighter. No defilements. Anupatta sadattu. So he, step by step, accomplish his objective, accomplish his destination, or kind of a wish. That's how he has become an arahant, completely pure person. Now it is not necessary to have another goal. There is no aim again. There is no another objective, new objective, because he has accomplished the task. Now there is no point of having a target. So therefore, for him, He has no desire in this show and to the other show. He has abandoned both. He has accomplished the task, completed the task. So this in a way, very interesting way that Buddha explained in this situation, how one can maintain a goal and continue one's practice, understand that some defilements are available, potential is available, personality traits are available, tendencies are available. It drives you towards further purification. And when the release happens, even when it is happening temporarily, so you need to be with it. Now we need to stop the struggle. Now we need to stop the intentional activity. Abandon intention. So in one point, so we need to understand, okay, again and again, having an intention is a burden. I have an intention to achieve something, and then once I achieve it, I have another intention to achieve another thing. Once I achieve that, then another intention to achieve another thing. So there is no end. So in the spiritual practice, so when one becomes fairly mature at a given moment, so he take a decision not to have a new intention. So this is very beautifully mentioned in the Pottapada Sutta in Digha Nikaya. So it is where Buddha mentioned, Chetanaya me papiyo, Achetanaya me seyo. So this again and again, having an intention is kind of unwholesome. It is kind of a mean type of thing. How about not having an intention? So that would be much superior activity. That would be more sublime. That now he have a kind of a decision not to make further intentions. So that is how he is touching the nirodha, the cessation. Now, when one is able to achieve such thing, then we can say, okay, now there is no further aim, no further intention, no further desire. At least at that level, we need to be fully contented. Abandoning this show, abandoning that show, further show, next show, you have to simply be fully satisfied. Now, in the last sermon, somewhat related to the previous one, it is continuing. Yo nivarane pahaya pancha, anigo tinna katang kato visallo. So bhikkhu jahatiyo raparang urago jinnam iva tacham purana. Now here also fairly related to the defilements. Sometimes we call them as five hindrances. Kamachanda, the sensual desire. Vyapada, the ill will. Thinamidda, what we call as the sloth and torpor. Uddaccha kukuccha, restlessness and regret. Vichikicca, the perplexity or doubt. So those are the typically what we recognize as the hindrances. So because of these hindrances, we can't purify the mind. Mind is very much like crowded, covered. Mind is dull, dark. But whenever we are developing bodhjanga, whenever we are developing five spiritual faculties, now they are slowly pushing aside, keeping aside these hindrances. They are able to subside these hindrances. Now the mind is illuminated. Now mind is activated. Now you find sign of purity, peacefulness, wakefulness in the mind. Now therefore, abandoning five hindrances, even temporary, is one of the accomplishments of the spiritual life. So that is where we do in the samadhi practice. So as one develops samadhi, so he is capable of abandoning hindrances. Say for example, if you are practicing anapanasati, so again and again you have to apply your mind to the breath. When in breath is finished, next the out breath is available. Now you need to pay your attention to out breath. When you done that, then again the new in-breath is available. You need to pay attention to that. When it is done that, a new out-breath is available. You need to pay attention to that. Now, there is no time to rest in a way. So your mind is fully activated. Again and again you need to accomplish this task. Again and again you need to attend to this new coming breath. Now that abandons sloth and torpor. Thinamidda. So vitakka, therefore, fully against the thinamidda. And on the other hand, when you are able to examine the object, now you are able to well establish on the object. Now, rather than stopping there, we need to examine the object, whether it is in-breath or out-breath, whether it is longer or shorter, where is it exactly touching. So likewise, we are now trying to properly recognize the object. So that abandons the doubt. So the quality, what we call as vichara, sustained attention, is quite opposite to the defilement or the hindrance, doubt, perplexity. So when proper examination is available, investigation is available, it abandons, it prevents the doubt, vichikicca being arisen. Now, once it is done, okay, mind is fairly happy and comfortable. So that means there is no possibility of ill will to arise because mind is happy. Because you have done that properly, mind is in a balance, so it is happy. So the ill will is abandoned because of the piti, rapture. And when such environment is available, you feel comfortable. You don't need to worry, you don't need to regret. Mind doesn't want to go out because it has found some inner happiness, inner joy. As a result of that, this happiness is causing what you call regret and restlessness to disappear, to abandon. Uddaccha kukkuccha vichikicca is abandoned because of the happiness available now in the mind. Now, when you are continuing this, mind get fairly concentrated. Now mind doesn't want to go out, doesn't want to jump from this object to the other object because it has found a kind of a calmness, happiness, peacefulness in this present object. So it is basically, on the other hand, has concentrated, collected. So this collectedness, concentration, ekagrata, is therefore opposite against the kamachanda, sensual desire. So whenever we are developing these jhanic factors, samadhi factors, they are completely counteracting with the hindrances. So when hindrances are abandoned, that means your jhana factors, these helpful spiritual qualities, skills are developed in the mind. Having abandoned 5 hindrances, untroubled, now you are not worried. Because whenever you are worried, that means you have some kind of a, say, kukkuccha, kind of a regret. Now you are untroubled. Crossed over perplexity. Now no doubt. Vichikicca is abandoned because you know exactly what is happening right now. You are fully living in the present moment. You are quite confident. This is the in-breath, this is the out-breath. You are confident. You are not confused. And you have given some value to your task. Therefore, you are not worried about what you have to do in the past, or you are not worried about what you are going to do in the future. But right now, you are fully contented with this very present, ordinary kind of an experience. Now, when you are doing that, now there are no perplexity in the mind. And free of darts. And darts is something, salla is something differently explained. So, 5 darts are explained in like this in the commentary. The dart of lust, hatred, delusion. So that those are the roots of the defilements, raga, dosa, moha. And other than that, conceit and views, mana and ditti. So these are the 5 darts explained. Now, when one is able to abandon hindrances, this lust, hatred, delusion is temporarily subsided. And different views may not be available in the mind. Probably your mind is having some kind of calmness. But on the other hand, there could be little conceit. But that also we need to recognize and kept aside. Because sometimes when we are successful, there could be the availability of conceit. I am done. I am good. I am clever. I am better. I am skillful than another person. I am an expert. They are doing samatha, I am doing vipassana. So likewise, I mean, we can do various comparison and then we can have self-conceit. So that is a defilement. So understanding when conceit is available in the mind requires fair amount of honesty, requires fair amount of humble attitude within ourselves. Otherwise, what happens is even meditation, even spiritual practice bring some kind of a conceit within ourselves. But on the other hand, when one recognizes that none of these aggregates belong to me, no point of identifying with them. You can't consider form as myself, I. Can't consider feelings as myself or I. Can't consider various perceptions, signs available in the mind as I or myself. And can't consider different kinds of thoughts even arising in the mind. Attitudes available in the mind. Determinations available in the mind. So we can sometimes recognize with them, we sometimes identify ourselves with them. I am an angry person. I am angry. I am a lustful person. I am quite jealous person. I am worried. So basically, we are interpreting our experience with an added I. Now, if we are able to ignore that, avoid that, then these things are there, but we don't need to claim that as a person. These are merely different mental states. They simply come and go. And I don't need to identify with it. I simply can watch it. Be aware of it. Now that actually helps us to calming down. Now hindrances become kind of outside. They don't belong to me. Rather, my observation is continuing. And whenever these things appear, I can be fully aware and then let it go. So likewise, when we are developing correct attitude, correct practice, slowly, we can abandon various different views available in the mind. And ultimately, we can have the proper view, correct view, samadhi. So that actually paves the way to develop other path factors as well. So sila sikha, samadhi sikha, panya sikha. So likewise, Buddha explained how one develops. So these different trainings. At the beginning, probably you may give some emphasis on the sila. Next, want to develop samadhi. Next, want to develop vipassana, panya. But later you understand, okay, again I have to further enhance sila. If I have too strongly grasped that, I need to little relax that. I have to have a clear mind. If my mind is too much concentrated, excessively concentrated, then I have to release that. I have to maintain a kind of a balanced, relaxed mind. So the samadhi has to be properly adjusted. And while keeping that environment in the mind, now say we are developing further insights. Now, when such practice is continuing, we can say, okay, these darts are also abandoned. So hindrances are abandoned, their tendencies are abandoned. Now all these things are talking the very much the same. So we have different levels of defilements. So at the beginning, probably we may not worried about or not concerned about these things. We may get into wrong activities, kill animals, hurt others, steal things, going through sexual misconduct, lying, having intoxicants. So these are kind of ignorant way of living. But later, probably, we are turning to another side. We do kind of a character change, behavioral change. And now we are trying to establish in the morality. We feel someone good. We have that kind of a innocent happiness, righteous happiness. So when that is available, okay, rather than stopping there, okay, let me develop some concentration, because that is quite necessary to develop vipassana. So vipassana, the wisdom part, requires samadhi as a prerequisite. And when that is available, then we should not stop there. I mean, having a samadhi is a blissful experience, but that is not the goal. So we are acquiring or developing samadhi for a purpose. So that is to use it for the development of the wisdom. Now suppose we are developing wisdom. Now when wisdom is available, probably we may understand, okay, I don't need to spend more time on samadhi now. Better I need to look after the mind, how it is again and again going and grasping. What are the defilements appearing? What are the traits strongly available? How a person is created? How a self-view is promoted? So likewise, now we are doing some in-depth understanding of ourselves. So rather than an external body, a teacher, coming and telling us, we ourselves become our own teacher. So we are doing kind of a self-corrective measure. We are taking a kind of a self-corrective measure by ourselves. So we are becoming more mature now. So rather than expecting another person to guide, another person to correct, find and advise, okay, how about the practice itself is giving that opportunity? Finding my own weaknesses, giving me guidelines, showing me the correct path. So that is one mature task of the mindfulness. So Buddha mentioned, satarakkhena chetasa viharati. So the nobles, Buddha mentioned, they have the guard, they have the security, they have the protection of the mindfulness. They don't have anything else, so they are keeping mindfulness in the forefront, and that mindfulness appear like a guard, appear like a protector. And that is actually telling us, okay, this is good, this is bad, you better improve this, you better little decrease this. So likewise, proper management or self-monitoring is going on. As a result of that, now maybe less defilements, maybe less hindrances. The yogi may experience some calmness, peacefulness throughout. And probably he may support that further with the sila. He may develop Indriya Sangvara sila, guarding his senses without allowing the defilements to creep in. Now he is managing things through the wisdom. Now he has some better understanding, like he has climbed to the top of the hill. Now he can see various situations. How people are working in one side, how people are working in another side, how streams are flowing, how birds are flying, because he is on the top of the hill. Similarly, when one develops a fair amount of spiritual faculties, now he can recognize what is really going on, where the clinging is operating, whether the mind is going and clinging to the body, something physical, or whether it is clinging to various feelings, or whether it is clinging to various signs appearing in the mind. And on the other hand, he may be recognizing what are the thoughts going on in the mind, what are the defilements appearing in the mind, not recognizing that or not identifying with them, recognizing and abandoning them, letting them go. So likewise, now he is in a more mature level, understanding, and he is capable of handling things by himself. So likewise, we can say this, even the sutta, the Uraga Sutta, the serpent, using the simile of the serpent, Buddha is taking us step by step to a more mature level, starting with very basics, but guiding us into deeper understandings. So therefore, it's a very interesting sutta, and encouraging the letting go of the practice, or letting go of various defilements, various wrong views, fixations available in the mind, and freeing the mind. So Venerable Achan Cha mentioned, if we let go a little, we may have little freedom. If we let go more, we may have more freedom. And if we are able to let go totally, then we have total freedom. So something like that. So with that note, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I'd like to open the session for questions.
Sarai Bhante, we have six questions now. The first one is on mindful walking. Dear Venerable Sir, when I was doing my regular walking mindfulness practice last week, after about 15 to 20 minutes, my mind started to settle and to observe the left and right soles without missing any steps. As per Venerable's advice, I took this as a clue of establishing mindfulness and kept on observing. I could observe how the pressure on the soles spread across hot and cold nature and hard and smooth transitions of each step. After about 10 minutes of this continuous mindfulness observation, I started hearing a very sharp, high-frequency background noise. I could continue the practice in this background ringing tone. However, when I finished the practice, this sound vanished. This happened multiple times and seems the sound comes down at some point in the practice without my effort or involvement. If I try to listen or search for it, I could not hear it. Is this some indication that my mindfulness is improving? Much merits for your valuable service and for this program. That's the end of the question.
Yeah. Yes, I can simply answer as yes, because this is how we are understanding the sound of silence. So when our mind is attuned to some kind of calmness, reaching some kind of calmness, so we start hearing some sort of a inner sound. But this is one stage of our practice. Now, we don't need to worry about it. We can recognize, okay, now I am going through or I am passing that particular milestone in my practice. So, as you suggested, I mean, various milestones we can recognize in our path. Now, we are going through these different stages. Time. So, whenever we understand, okay, there's a little high frequency sound available, sound of crickets available or something like that, then actually we are actually experiencing the sound of silence. And we can keep it as a background or keep it as a background, maybe little music, and we can continue our practice. Yeah.
Question number 2 of 6. This is also mindful walking. Dear Bhante, I started recently and found mindfulness practice can be quite relaxing and calming experience. I do not know if my practice is hitting the right spots and I am even mindful 100%. But after the session, I become very calm and relaxed for the rest of the day. Here is my last walking experience. My path is about 30 steps, tile and part carpet floor. I start focusing on the lower body, observing the movements. I get attention to the weight on my soles and how the legs move, transferring the weight. Time to time, I feel the hardness of the tile and the softness of the carpet. Various thoughts come in and go continuously. Sometimes I get distracted and after missing a few steps, come back to the walking. This is how my walking happens and it seems like I am walking along a valley of continuous rockfall. Thoughts bombard all the time, but I can still hang on and continue walking 1 hour. Thank you for your advice. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I also can say just hang on, just continue your walking, because these things are happening and many thoughts are available and we are great thinkers in that sense. We are thinking, never ending. But walking actually help us to slowly vomit all these, because we are in a very, open environment. We can see things, we can hear things, we can recognize various thoughts coming, but not worried. So this the way it is right now, nothing to worry. So let me time to time pay attention to the feeling, or time to time pay attention to the sensations of the foot. So that is where we need to little pay more attention. No point of worrying right now about thinking, because we can't confront thinking right now. But the solution lies with the body. So as much as possible, now we need to be with the primary object. So that is the, say, the left foot, that is the right foot, or that is the sensation appearing or happening at the right foot, appearing at the left foot. So likewise, so as much as possible, try to keep your attention on that sensation. It's very much like you are breaking that vicious thinking cycle and bringing your attention willfully to your foot. So it has to be done intentionally at the beginning. So more you are intentionally doing that, paying your attention to that selected object, so that rumination may become weaker and weaker. And there may be a stage where you are not giving enough energy to that rumination. Rather, you are paying more attention to what is available right now in the body. So at that time, it's a kind of a turning point that you are now in the winning side. Yeah.
Question number 3 of 6. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, last time you explained very well the similarities and the differences of jhanic states without form, arupa jhana, and the deep mental states of the vipassana practitioner based on mindfulness. Thank you so much for that rare explanation. What an opportunity for this forum to hear from a true practitioner who is kind enough to share the experience and knowledge. I have been to a couple of retreats conducted by Bhante and Most Venerable Dhammajiva and recall reflection reports explaining some of these deep states. Even though ordinary practitioners like us cannot intentionally enter these states and dwell there, is it possible that we can stumble across these as well unknowingly? Much merits for your valuable service with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think it is possible because knowing these things through our book knowledge, what are the things available, what are the factors available, is something maybe useful. But time to time, unknowingly, we can get on to these states. But momentarily, not for long time, but time to time we might experience these things. On the other hand, typically, we are not giving much emphasis to these states, these higher concentration states, because concentration is a kind of a tool that we can use based on the situation. Now, say for example, say you have to cut a tree. So in that sense, you are assume that you are using an axe, and that axe has to be sharpened. And once that axe is sharpened to some extent, and when you are confident that, okay, that is enough to cut the tree, okay, now you start cutting the tree. I don't need to continue to sharpen the axe forever. Rather, when it is sharpened enough, I need to start the proper activity or the proper objective, proper goal. So therefore, in the Mahasi tradition, so there is no huge emphasis given to the concentration. Rather, when fair amount of concentration is available, enough amount of concentration is available, the yogi is encouraged to start the investigation. So now the mind is fairly mindful and you have clear comprehension. You can distinctly recognize different phenomena. That means the clarity of mind is available. Your mind is instantaneously again and again get concentrated. Okay, now we'll do the investigation. So therefore, it's a kind of a collective action going on, not only concentration. Concentration is not the ultimate goal. That is not the main objective. Rather, it is using as another requisite, prerequisite. And once it is available, okay, we are continuing the proper, the vipassana activity. So therefore, I think what you are telling is true, and time to time we may get on to these deep states, but no need to fully absorb to them, no need to say spend hours in them. So rather, when we are confident, okay, we can start practicing, observing, investigating various phenomena, so that very investigation also enhances this skill of being with a particular object. Because, you know, this why our minds are jumping from one object to the other object is because of the sensual desire, kamachanda. But when we are developing fair amount of vipassana, this kamachanda also fairly subsided. So now mind can stay with a particular selected object for a long time without any complaints, without any agitation. So now the necessary requirements are fulfilled. Okay, let's continue our practice in the vipassana. So that is the approach taken by Mahasi Sayadaw, and that is the approach we sometimes recommend, because yogi is not spending long time in developing higher concentrations.
The next question is question number 7. Sorry, question number 4 of 7. It's a general question. Mindfulness question. Dear Venerable Bhante, I forget that the current moment is the only moment and give priority to a thought that arises or emotion that crops up on making plans or lamenting of past. What should one do to fully convince that this is the only moment ever? Sometimes I feel if I contemplate on death, this discipline can be established. What technique do you use, Bhante? Your advice is much appreciated. With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, I mean, simply contemplating, simply trying to convince the mind by reading might not be enough. Because our mind is used to be in the past, used to delight in the future, used to sort of appreciate the complexity, or maybe worrying, maybe thinking, maybe fantasizing. So this is the typical nature of the mind. So you can try to convince the mind, but that would be not enough. So that is why we need various practical means, practical tools, exercises to train the mind. So that's why various mindfulness practices are required, like mindfulness on breathing, mindful walking, mindful eating. So likewise, many mindful activities helps us to train the mind to live in the present moment. But on the other hand, it doesn't mean that we have to completely avoid thinking about the past, completely avoid thinking about the future. Rather, when the mindfulness is fairly established, you can even reflect about the past while being mindful. You can plan about the future while being mindful. So you are not losing the present moment. So the thinking about the past may not overwhelm you. Planning about the future may not overwhelm you. Rather, you are capable of maintaining your stability. So your mental stability or integrity is maintained even when mind is thinking about the past or future. So this is the kind of a approach that we may encourage, but at the beginning it appear like we are very much like trying to get rid of the past and the future, but it is not. Later, once we are fully established in the present moment, while being in the present, you can think about the past, what has happened in the past. We can learn from the past. Similarly, we can think about the future, maybe conduct a kind of a design, a plan, whatever it is. But fully aware, okay, now I am sitting. Now I am little planning, but I know I can stop that whenever it is necessary. Under my supervision, things are happening.
Number 5 of 7 is actually a question from last session. Bhante, how to prevent identifying yourself with upcoming emotions? That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, basically, sometimes what happens is when we have less mindfulness, so these little feelings, thoughts, maybe different perceptions, they are growing without our knowledge, because our mindfulness is not sharp enough and we are not attentive, we are not wakeful. But as a result of that, various situations happening in the mind is slowly growing without our attention. Now they become sort of huge emotions, strong emotions, now we are too late. Then we become emotional and we are crying and we are hating, or we are getting into various words, arguments, because that emotion has overwhelmed us. But as we develop mindfulness, so we can recognize these different sources or different thoughts, different, mental images happening at their very early stages. So now if we are able to recognize them at their very early stages, so we are not promoting them, we are not getting deluded by them. Rather we know, okay, this is a feeling, this is a sensation, this is a thought, this is a mental image. So likewise, we are trying to see things as they truly are. That helps to minimize developing these states to the level of emotions. So the emotions are fairly a kind of a aggravated level of these different what we call the thoughts, feelings, mental images, perceptions, etc. But if you are able to understand them at their very early stages, they may not grow to the level of emotion. And I mean, even if you are a serious practitioner or fairly seasoned practitioner, you can sometimes, overwhelmed by certain things, but that has to be minimized, because we should not allow this emotion to overwhelm our mind, again go and grasp things, or being sort of neurotic, being emotional, being crying. So if we can't stop that altogether, then can't help. But if we know, okay, now things are going in the wrong direction, so again the mind is going in the wrong track, then we better apply brakes. Rather than allowing these emotions to overpower us, we better take control over and minimize or control or slowly leave aside those possibilities.
Question number 6 of 7 is the Dhamma Sermon. Dear Venerable Bhante, with regards to today's Dhamma talk, could you please elaborate what Buddhapiyanan Mahanse advised Venerable Pottapada? How not to think and stay without getting without clinging to thoughts? Was this when one is meditating or on all occasions? I assume all occasions, Bhante, with metta. That's the end of the question.
It's difficult to do on all occasions, but actually we have to start doing it particularly in the vipassana meditation at the beginning. So say for example, I'm trying to recognize that the statement done by the Buddha. So in the sutta, actually what you call as the summit of perceptions are recognized, like someone can achieve first jhana, someone can achieve second jhana, someone can even achieve arupa jhana, something like that. So probably at that level, at that moment, he takes a decision, okay, this is enough. No point of further developing the samadhi. No point of again and have another intention to have another thing and becoming another thing. Better stop at this level. Better I take a decision. So likewise, he come to a conclusion to stop that. And then he stop making future intention or future chetana, and that helps to altogether touch the Nirodha. So that is what mentioning in the Pottapada Sutta. And at the beginning you can't do it in the day-to-day activities, but rather we need to purposely do while in the vipassana practice, maybe in the sitting session. But later slowly we can sort of develop that, train that to the other levels. Okay, how about doing that while in the walking session? Even though we are walking, okay, there is no another intention to look at things or think about things, worrying about things. Okay, I am keeping my mind fully relaxed without making any intention. Walking may be happening, doesn't matter, but no more new intentions. Maybe later, probably, you can try to do it while doing other activities as well. Okay, we can continue.
Question number 7 of 7. This is the last question, and it's on the Dhamma Sermon. Dear Venerable Bhante, you mentioned that Ajahn Chah had mentioned if letting go is more, that the freedom is more. My question is that does this letting go need to happen with the deep insight that experience is anicca, not just merely forgetting or dropping from the mind? Could you please elaborate this more, Bhante? Much appreciated and merits with metta.
Definitely. Okay, definitely. It's not some kind of a forceful letting go, but rather the letting go may be supported with wisdom. Actually, why we are holding, why we are grasping is because of ignorance, because of avidya. Now, when wisdom is developed, then we recognize, okay, what we are grasping is useless. What we are grasping is not substantial. What we are grasping is not worthy. So that understanding may grow within ourselves. As a result of that, the letting go process is more natural, more in a way quite smooth. So it is not that we are trying to force ourselves to throw away things, abandon things, get rid of things, let go of things. So that won't be successful. Rather, we approach the problem in a different manner. So we are trying to address the sources, address the causes of grasping. Now we are eliminating those causes. The main cause is the ignorance. We don't know the real nature of the things. On the other hand, we have a wrong understanding about things. We think that things are belonging to me. We think that they may provide me happiness. They may give me satisfaction, and they may last forever. They may last for several years. So likewise, we have the wrong perception of the permanence, wrong perception of satisfaction, wrong perception of having some control. So these are the wrong perceptions we have. So in order to remove those wrong perceptions and to have the correct perceptions, now we are developing the practice or developing vipassana, the wisdom. Then our perceptions may change. Okay, now we understand, okay, things are impermanent. Things are unsatisfactory. And things doesn't belong to me. And things doesn't behave the way I want. So likewise, we are, our complete cognitive change, transition may happen. So at that time, maybe the letting go may be smooth, quite easy, because the necessary conditions for grasping is abandoned. Now the letting go is quite natural. Yeah.
So that concludes the questions for today, the written questions today. We have 5 minutes, Bhante, we'll close early.
Actually, I like to show that Pottapada Sutta, but it is in Sinhala right now. So in the Pottapada Sutta, actually different people, different practitioners can reach different stages. In this Sutta, Buddha given that particular advice when someone has reached the, what you call the Akinchanyayatana. So there Buddha mentioned, Chete manasame papiyo, achete manasame seyo. Ahancheva kopana, cheteyang abhisankareyang, imachame sanya nirujjeyung, anyaja oladika sanya upajjeyung. Now he understood, okay, this having new intention is kind of mean, because it may pave the way to another new intention. And then you become complete a new person. You are going through this becoming process. Now, how about na cheva cheteyam, na chabi sankareyanti? How about not making any intention and stopping constructions altogether, stopping preparations altogether. Nachaiva cheteyam, nacha abhisankareyam. Now he takes decision here. So as a result of that, so nacheva cheteti na chabi sankharoti. Now he stopped making intentions and he stopped making any constructions, formations. Tassa acheteto anabisankharoto. Tacheva sanya niruddhanti anyacha olarika sanya na uppajjanti. Now whatever things arise, now they are slowly fading away. No new intentions, no new sankhara going to arise. As a result of that, so nirodham pusati. As a result of that, now the mind ceases. Now this is the statement quite critical in this Pottapada Sutta, how Buddha explained at different stages, so this can be achieved. Actually, after this explanation is given, Pottapada asks a very interesting question. So whether you are declaring only one such point, only one such situation that you can do this decision, or are there many? Then Buddha mentioned there are many. So that is why you can take this radical decision at your practice at a given moment, particularly when you are continuing your samatha practice. So rather than achieving new and new states, how about completely stopping that, making new intention and avoiding further constructions and have that decision? Then the possibility of touching the cessation is possible. So there is something available in the Pottapada Sutta, and I would like to share that with you. Okay, then I think we can wind up the session.
Yes, Bhante. So to end the program, I would first like to thank Bhante for his valuable time today and also share the merits with the organizers and all beings, both seen and unseen, who enable this program. I would also like to thank and pass the merits to the participants for joining the program today, for practicing and also sharing the questions. Teruvan Saranai. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Okay, Teruvan Saranai.